Today's presenters are Roy Learns, Joshua Cowles, Farzana Anwar. Roy, Joshua, and Farzana are WebSphere Commerce Level 2 support analysts. As members of the WebSphere Commerce Level 2 support team, they're responsible for providing technical assistance to clients who use the WebSphere Commerce family of products, from installation and configuration to integration and performance. At this time, I'd like to turn the presentation over to Roy, Joshua, and Farzana.
Thank you, Elijah. This is Roy. So if we move on to this next slide for agenda. In today's agenda, we're going to talk about, we're going to skim through the web service in general quickly. Our assumption is for most of the people listening to this presentation, you probably know about a standard way to develop web service. Then we will talk about WebSphere Commerce web service architecture. We will focus on how the execution flow, how commerce handle web services, and also different aspects of web services in WebSphere Commerce. Then we move on to web service tooling. So basically some tools that you can use to help debugging web services. And finally, we will talk about different techniques to do problem determination for WebSphere Commerce web services. Slide number 3. So this slide shows you a general view of what a web service is. So basically, you have a client, a web service requester, a server, a service provider. Service provider basically holds web services, and web service exposes itself using web service descriptions. So this means whistle files. You want to publish your services optionally to a service broker, so that the client can look for the service from the service broker. Another way for a client to get the service description is maybe either through files or email that have the whistle file attached. The client and the server basically communicate through the SOAP protocol. So let's move on to the next slide, slide number 4. So before I talk about how WebSphere Commerce handle web services, I would like to basically introduce the IBM SOA adoption model. From this SOA adoption model, we can see how WebSphere Commerce positions itself in this model. So there are 4 phases on SOA adoption model. The first phase is basically exposing the application through web services. For WebSphere Commerce 6.0, we are in that phase. Basically, WebSphere Commerce has web service interface where other components or other third-party software can connect to WebSphere Commerce through web services. In analogy, you can think about you have an accounting department in an enterprise and you have an accounting application exposing itself as web services. You can consider that as phase number 1. Phase number 2 is web service-oriented integration of business function. So in that part, you can think of your accounting department have multiple services, accounting services. And to provide the application, you integrate these multiple services into one application. Commerce also have features or web service feature in this phase. So you can think of WebSphere Portal integrated with WebSphere Commerce in this scenario. So in a more advanced implementation of SOA, phase number 3 is enterprise-wide transformations, meaning that now instead of focusing on one department, you have web services communicate across applications running on different departments, forming an enterprise-wide IT transformations. This is more a business-driven problem instead of technically driven issues. So this is based on your business requirement. Phase number 4 is on-demand business transformations. What it means is in the accounting department example, you may have multiple service vendors implementing the same accounting application using the same interface. And for a given client at a given time, you can select which service vendor to use for your applications. And different service vendor, although they provide the same service, they may provide different quality of service. So where does commerce sit right now in this SOA adoption model? For 6.0, we do provide classical web services. So it meets the phase number one and number two. We do have something called SOI, stand for service-oriented integration. That's provided by feature pack 1 and 2. It's basically a similar implementation of classical web service, but it goes beyond to provide component facade or component services. In feature pack 3, we have something called SOA or Board Business Object Document Programming Model. In this presentation, we're going to focus on the classical web services. In the future, we may provide the WSTE based on feature pack 1 SOI or feature pack 3 SOA programming model. Moving on to slide number 5. So I will begin by talking about the generic or standard way of implementing a web service or J2EE compliant web services. So it's like a simple point-to-point programming where you have a client and you have a server. On the client side, you basically get a WSO file or the service description files, and then you implement the client's logic. You also provide XML descriptor files, such as web application XML, JS RPC mapping files. On the server side, you need to provide the SEI, or Service Endpoint Interface, and implement the logic. You also provide several XML descriptors, such as WSO, JS RPC. So this is the standard way of doing web service in a J2EE compliant way. So moving on to the next slide number 6. Okay, so this slide shows the differences between implementing a web service in a J2EE way and also in Westfield Commerce way. So on the right hand side, you can see the step you need to do or you need to follow to implement a Westfield Commerce web services. You can see that you no longer need a service endpoint interface in Westfield Commerce web services. Okay? And I will explain that later on in a future slide. You still have to implement the logic, but rather than implementing in a Java bean, you implement the logic in a controller command. One additional step you need to follow is to implement a JSP response composition page, which I will also talk about in a future slide. For most of the XML descriptor files, they are generated automatically by RED tools. And there are some specific commerce-specific XML descriptors, such as service mapping XML and web service SOA board template.extension.xml, which I will also discuss in the later slide. Slide number 7. All right, so this slide shows you how Westfield Commerce handle web service requests. And this also explains some of the points I make on the earlier slide. So step number 1, let's say you have a SOAP request coming in, a web service SOAP request coming in to WAS. WAS will basically intercept the SOAP message, look at its header, and then you forward that to something called Westfield Commerce Web Service Router. It's basically a web service wall project or wall files that holds all the web service inside Westfield Commerce. It also has a generic interception point or service endpoint interface for all web services inside Westfield Commerce. So that's explain why you don't need to implement the SEI, because Westfield Commerce already provides SEI out of the box. This web service router contains logic that will retrieve the credential and activities from the SOAP header. So we do the authentication necessary, or you will associate the activity token or activity, the context, business context activities, before the command being executed. Then the router will convert the SOAP body, the content in the SOAP body, into name value pairs, or something called, or in the form of command properties. These command properties will hold the command to be executed, the data associated with the data with the command that will be used by the controller command later on. So this is about step number four. Step number five, the Raspberry Commerce web service router will, based on the command specified in the SOAP body or in the command property, and execute the command. The command is basically the controller command that you have implemented along with the web service. Upon completion of the controller command, it will specify which view that the Raspberry Commerce will forward to. And based on the struct configuration, the struct will identify the JSP files to be executed. And Commerce will execute the JSP composition service to compose the JSP. Instead of generating HTML files, this JSP will generate XML files. This XML files is basically the response XML that you send back to the client. And step number six, finally, the Commerce will encapsulate this XML into the SOAP messages and send it back to the client. So that basically summarizes the execution flow of how Commerce handle web service requests coming in. Slide number eight. Okay, message mappers. So in the slide before, I talked about how Commerce convert the SOAP body into a construct called command properties. And it does this by the message mapper mechanisms. Okay, and the definition of message mapper, the generic message mapper is defined in the WC server XML. This is not a construct specifically for web services. We have this construct for message components such as MQ message and other message components. And you can find the definition in the WC XML with the name SOA BOD integrations as a name. So you have to make sure that this message mapper is being run during the initializations of Raspberry Commerce. Slide number nine. In addition to make sure that the message mapper being run in Raspberry Commerce, you also have to define your message mapping template. This message mapping template tells message mapper of how to map the SOAP body content into the command property in MultiPeer. So this is customizable. Out of the box, we have something called web service SOA board template.xml. But we recommend you to put your logic inside the web service SOA board template.extension.xml. We do have a tutorial on the info centers that tell you how to customize these files. And Red or the toolkit also provide a graphical way of customizing this file. So we recommend you to follow that example. I understand that the text at the bottom of the slide may be a little bit small on the presentations, but we do have alphabet version of this presentation. So feel free to go to that documentation and look at the example in more detail. Slide number 10. In the previous slide, I have also mentioned about web services use JSP to compose XML response. So in this slide, I show you an example of how the JSP looks like on the right-hand side. And on the screenshot on the left-hand side, it's actually a screenshot from the Red Tools. What you saw is how you can generate a XML template or a JSP template based on a XML schema. So basically what you should do, or what we recommend you to do, is look at the XML schema of the response object, and then you right-click on it and generate XML files. Okay, and then you rename this XML files as JSP and populate this JSP using some JSP constructs such as data bin and access bin. Those data bin and access bin will retrieve the data from the database, basically populate the XML content before Commerce sending those contents back to the client. So basically I have gone through the Raspberry Commerce web service architectures and specific construct about WebSphere Commerce we use to handle web service requests. So I'll pass the phone to Fosanna, who will talk about different aspects of WebSphere Commerce, web services, and also tooling.
Okay, thanks, Roy. So I'm going to carry on at this point and talk a little bit about web services in conjunction with Dynacache and JSP responses. So first of all, I'm on slide 11 right now. And the first point, the response of the web service request is composed by a JSP page. And you can use web service Dynacache to provide either full page or fragment caching of the web service responses. The pieces of the response can then be derived from the cache instead of the page being continuously executed each time the service is requested, while resulting in obvious performance benefits. And secondly, the portion of your JSP page that generates the XML file for example, product information, can be placed in a separate fragment by splitting up the JSP response into a main JSP page and a JSP fragment. You can either reuse existing JSP sources for other web service responses, or you can also specify a caching policy on those JSP pages. So for details on how to implement this, please refer to the link on the bottom of this slide. It will take you to the WebSphere Commerce Information Center, to the topic defining an inbound web service, and in particular, you would want to focus on step 8. I'll move on now to slide 12. I would like to talk a little bit at this point about web service and Java messaging service. Now, the web service engine is implemented by a message-driven bean, or MDB, listening to a specific destination rather than by a servlet, as it was in the past. Java messaging service is not enabled by default. To enable this, there are three main steps that have to be done. First, you would need to define the JMS resources. And this would include the WebSphere MQ queue connection factory and the WebSphere MQ queue destination. Once you've done that, you would need to define the messaging listening port. And then finally, you need to define the JMS message-driven bean, or the MDB, in the web service JMS router. Again, for details on this implementation, please refer to the link on the bottom of this slide. Should take you to the WebSphere Commerce Information Center with details about the implementation. I'd like to move on at this point to slide 13 and talk a little bit about web services and security. Now, by default, all web service requests have the authentication of a generic user, and this user has an ID of -1002. If you are going to use basic authentication, you should be aware of the fact that the user credentials are available in plain text in the SOAP header. So, for example, if you were to look at the code snippet on the bottom of this slide, you would see that the username David is exposed, as is David's password, in this case, DivaD. Okay, so it's recommended that if you're going to use basic authentication, you do it in conjunction with secure hypertext transfer protocol. I'm going to move on now to slide 14 and delve into activity tokens. Now, an identifier for an activity which spans multiple requests and transactions is known to or referred to as an activity token. It's generated when a user logs on to the site, terminates when a user logs off. Now, the WASP web service engine has a custom token pluggable architecture. And this is what the WebSphere Commerce web service framework leverages to place that activity token into the SOAP header of that request. Now, for your reference, it's a good idea to turn on WC_server trace component whenever you're working with activity tokens if you need to debug any or troubleshoot any issues. What this does is it reveals a lot more information about the activity token in the log files. So moving on to slide 15, and I'll continue with my discussion on activity tokens. To keep track of sessions with activity tokens, there are four main steps which have to be done. The first is you need to generate the client sub for the web service definition language file found in the business context service wrapper.wisdo file in the toolkit. It's found in the directory in the path shown in the middle of this slide. Once you've done that, you need to create a utility class to manage the activity token. Then, create a Jack RPC handler that will be registered to the client web service proxy object. Finally, create a client to place those client requests. So these are the high-level steps which you would need to do to keep track of a session with an activity token. For details on how to implement this, again, please refer to the WebSphere Commerce Information Center for the details. I'm going to continue and move on to slide 16 now and go back and talk a little bit more about security. So the WebSphere Commerce Web Service Controller gets the user credentials from the SOAP header. It then calls the business context service and starts a new session based on the specified credentials. So if you were providing the credentials of a generic user, that's what it would use to start up the new session. As users of web services, we should be aware, though, that the activity token will only exist for the lifetime of the request processing, and the activity token will not be returned to the client. It is assumed that the client or the activity token is not required for further processing of that request, and hence it is not returned to that client. Okay, so that concludes some of my talk on the architecture part of WebSphere Commerce, and I'm going to move on to commerce tooling. And for your reference, I'm now on slide 17. So from slide 17 to 22, basically I'll be talking about various tools that are available to developers of web services. These are great tools to have in your arsenal and can really make the development of web services that much easier, as well as troubleshooting and debugging. So I'm on slide 17 now, and I'm going to be talking about converting the WSDL to Java. So a WSDL file, or the web service definition language file, is sourced in XML. And often we want to see the corresponding Java source. Now, Rational Application Developer provides a generate Java Bean skeleton option, and by a click of a mouse button, you can convert your XML source in the WSDL to its equivalent in Java. I'm going to move along to slide 18, and I'm going to introduce the TCP monitor to you briefly. Now, the TCP monitor directly shows the contents of a SOAP request or a SOAP response. So by eyeballing the contents of the TCP monitor, you can really view the contents of the SOAP request or response, and this helps in troubleshooting many simple problems. So, for example, the TCP monitor may return a fault, and it may show that it's being returned due to bad input. However, if you see that a fault is not returned, or perhaps a fault is returned and the reason for the error is not all that obvious, you would need to delve a little bit deeper and check the server side. Now, to run the TCP monitor, please execute the command at the bottom of the slide in a command window. This should bring up the TCP monitor for you. I'm going to move on to slide 19 now and talk about the Web Services Explorer. Now, you can access the Web Services Explorer in Rational Application Developer by going to Web Services and Test with Web Services Explorer. Now, clients can use connect to any web service, but this tool has a list of built-in UDDIs. The Web Services Explorer can load these web services either from the UDDIs or directly from the WSDL file itself. You can specify that. For your reference, xmethods.net is a repository of public service brokers or UDDIs. Just to play around with your clients, you can, if you wish, get some WSDL files from these UDDIs and get the corresponding skeleton classes. and then, you know, experiment around with them if you wish. So xmethods.net is a good site to refer to. So I'm moving on to slide 20 now. Now, slide 20 is a partial screenshot of the Web Services Explorer. Here we're working with the product services web service, and I'm providing the store identifier, which is 10101, as an input string. The other input I provide is a product SKU. If we go to slide 21 now, we'll see the output that we can get. And based on the SKU that I had provided, it's really now providing me with quite a lot of detailed information on that specific product ID. We can see the short description, a long description, even availability and suggested retail price. So you can provide or send back whatever response you wish to be displayed as a part of the response. And moving to slide 22. I'm looking at the source, and in the window towards the upper part of the screen capture, you'll see that the inputs that we've provided, so in this case, the store identifier of 10101 and the product SKUs 10,255. In the window below, in the SOAP response envelope, we can see the output, so the short description, which I had mentioned, the long description and availability. So really, this is the contents from the SOAP response envelope that it had displayed back in slide 21. So this wraps up my talk on the various tools that are available to web services developers. And I'll move on at this point to slide 23 and problem determination. So I'll hand over at this point to Joshua Cowdy, and he'll continue with the details.
Okay, thanks, Prasanna. So we're going to switch gears for the rest of this presentation and build on all the architecture and tooling that Prasanna and Roy have covered and get a little more down-to-earth with some more practical application. And we'll be starting with problem determination. Next slide. Okay, so when I get a problem with a web service, here's a really nice and easy way to just break down any web service problem into four broad categories. You either have a problem with the web service client, you have a problem connecting that client to your web service, you have a problem with how that web service is deployed in the server configuration, or the web service code itself is broken somehow. Next slide. Okay. So I'll look at the client first. Next. Slide 26, please. Okay, so first question. Is there a working client? So might be a WAS issue. WAS can automatically generate your client for you if you're using WSL to Java to create that client class. It's a common problem if you're using WAS 602.15 or less than that. WSL to Java does have a known issue where if there's a special character in the namespace, like a colon, then WSL to Java is going to generate some bad code, and then the client code just breaks and nothing will work. So the best solution is to upgrade your version of WAS, and if you can't do that on that particular system, then just generate the code somewhere else that you can upgrade and then copy it over. Next slide, please. 27. And if you have other client problems, well, then it's probably just an issue with the code. So what's easier than trying to root through many lines of your client code is to just run tcpmon. And if you have the tcpmon output, you can look at the SOAP request and then make sure that what you're actually sending to the web service has everything you expect it to. And if it doesn't, then you know where to start looking. Slide 28. Okay, connection issues. Next slide. Okay, for a connection problem, let's verify that Commerce Web Services are reachable. This is a very simple facility to do this. You can just hit the endpoint URL for the web service directly. So here's an out-of-box service you could hit, payment services. Or if you've created your own web service, hit that next, but hitting out of box one first just to make sure, because if that's broken, then it's a problem with web services in general. If it's just your service, then it's probably just a problem with your service. And if you want to get the WSDL for that web service definition, it's at a similar URL. And because Toolkit does not use SSL and port 8000 for web services by default, just use http://hosting. Slide 30. Slide 30, please. Okay. So if you hit the web service endpoints and the web service is up, you'll get a friendly response. Hi there, this is a web service. So this is good. Slide 31, please. Here's a more alarming response, not found. So this happens when the plugin doesn't know where your web services router.war is. So this would be a problem with the deployment of that web module itself. So you can see here I'm hitting my payment services endpoint, which is an out-of-box web service, but I just get a knockdown. Slide 32. Okay. So this is why you'll usually see this problem. Check in your plugin config.xml, and you'll see at the top I've included a snippet from a plugin config. Look at the URI group for the virtual host that you're connecting to. By default, it's going to be the tools virtual host, which is secure and port 8000. And you'll see highlighted in red there, that's the context route for the web services router.war. And if that's missing, you'll just get a file not found. So this generally happens if you created a instance while running WAS 602.17 or 602.19. If you've created on that level, then it may not have deployed this web module correctly, and that'll cause this missing entry. A quick workaround, just update your plugin config. The permanent solution, export the whole web services router.war, redeploy it back in, and make sure you use that correct context route. Slide 33. Now, as I mentioned before, the default virtual host will be tools, which is secure and port 8000. If you need this web service to be accessible on a different port, or you need to be accessible as insecure, this is achieved by deploying or mapping the web services router.war to a different virtual host. So in this screenshot, I'm setting the web services router to VH underscore mall, which is configured to be insecure and port 80. Slide 34. Okay. So next we'll cover server configuration issues. Next slide. Okay, these are usually the hardest problems you'll have to deal with. And most of the time when you have a web service problem, it'll be here. So how we determine that it's a server configuration problem is if the server is reachable, as we verified in the client configuration and the connection, but the web service code itself isn't being executed. So slide 36. So here's a known WAS issue. If your web service router.war doesn't even initialize, then you're never going to be able to hit that web service. So check in your system out if you're running WAS 602.17 or 602.19 and WebSphere Commerce Server 6001 or higher, and look for this exception stack. If you see this, it's a known issue, so follow that tech note and upgrade your level of WAS. Next slide. Okay, it's by no means definitive on server configuration, but that's the most common issue there. Next we'll be covering server code. Okay, so to see if it's a problem here, we'll enable tracing. So what's your incoming request with WC server tracing if you're using HTTP to connect to the web service? And if this is a JMS web service, use WC transport adapter. What you want to look for here is unexpected values in the web service response. This means that your service is being hit and it's generating a response, but the response is garbage. So we know that everything else must be working, but the server code itself is having problems. So look for that, or look for an exception stack that has code from the web service in it. And once you've reached that point, it's like any other non-web service problem, and it's usually just an issue with the code. Next slide. So here's a common mistake that we see on the server code, is that the logon command default is being called directly from the web service in order to provide authentication. So don't do this. It'll work some of the time, and other times it won't. It's not the right way to do it, and you'll probably get access control errors like this exception stack. Next slide. So the correct approach is just use existing WS security, W3 standards. These are standard for all web services, and they integrate nicely with WebSphere Commerce because we support authentication using a header like this. So here we're just passing login ID and password. Next slide. Okay. So there is an issue when you're testing a web service that requires security. The latest versions of RAD have a Web Service Explorer included that only allows you to update the body of your SOAP message. The problem is that the security credentials are passed in through the SOAP header, which you can't update. So if you have the latest development version of Eclipse, then you can set this, but all the latest G8 versions of everything doesn't allow for this feature yet. So if you need to test with authentication, then you're going to need to create your own client, which you would need to do eventually anyways, and test using that. And just as a reminder, if this is production, always use the HTTPS virtual host. The web service isn't going to be encoded or encrypted in any way, so the only way that that information gets secured is through SSL. Okay, next slide. Okay, so next we'll be applying what we just learned to a real-world case study. So here's the original problem. We have a web service that we developed, and it's working on our toolkit. We deployed a runtime, and now it doesn't work. So let's find out why. Next slide. All right, first thing I look at, because it's quick, check the connection. I hit the service endpoints. It says, hi there, this is a web service. So we have a connection. Next slide. So I check what client we're using for client problems. Well, we're using Web Services Explorer, and we don't need to authenticate. So Web Services Explorer is fine and tested. It's probably not going to have any problems. Next slide. And then next in order of quickness to check is the server code. I look at my system out. There's no exceptions coming from the web service code. And I can't even see any indication that the server code is run. I stick a couple system outs in my web service code. They don't even execute. Next slide. Okay, I think the e-meeting kind of squashed this slide a bit in the PowerPoint, so I can't read the last line, but it will show up in the PDF if you're following along with that. Okay, so after determining where the problem wasn't, now we know where to start looking. So we're checking in the system out and seeing this rather confusing exception. But because we know that the problem isn't with the client, we know that we can connect, and we know that the server code isn't being executed, I know that the first place to start looking is in the webinf directory, so we can look at the actual server configuration. I did a big grep and looked for anything that would be calling that open web service binding impl class and passing in some kind of parameter to that. And then I looked at some other web services that were working and saw that they used a SOAP elements parameter and that this custom web service was using a different param type. And because that param type wasn't valid for that class's method, it threw an exception. So what's important to mention here, and why I like using this one as an example, is that I had never seen this exception before, and I really wasn't too familiar with what it meant. But because I was taking a structured approach to attacking this problem, it was very easy to see where I should start looking, and then once I knew what files to look at, it was actually fairly quick to resolve. Next slide. All right. So now let's look at some practical implementations. These are some neat things you can do with web services on a commerce site. Next slide. Okay, so here's a cool way you can apply a web service on a commerce site. One common problem, especially on a system that's currently having issues with certain pages, is that you need to invalidate the cache. Oftentimes, a page might have errors some of the time, and if you get those cached, then it's going to serve them all of the time if that happens to be the cached page. So you'll need to invalidate those cached entries. But going through the going through your cache and just manually invalidating all your cache entries is a bit of work and not all that convenient. An easy application of web services is to just write code that invalidates those cached pages. So you change what's normally a very large interface into something that's just a big red button that people can hit by invoking this web service from anywhere. So it makes it very, very simple. Okay, next slide. Okay, here's another one that's applied quite a bit. This is when you need to integrate the bricks and mortar storefronts with the commerce application. So in this example, we have a gift registry configured under commerce so that when people have presents registered for their wedding, people can go online and buy presents from that registry. But people are buying presents in the storefront, and they're buying it for that same wedding, so obviously we want it to be updated against the same gift registry. Now, these bricks and mortar sites represent a perfect application for a web service because this is a widely distributed, heterogeneous environment, many different sort of computers, many different setups of software, but they all need to update the same gift registry. So you apply web services, create a web service to update your gift registry, and then when somebody buys something in the store, it updates the gift registry in the exact same way that the web page does. Next slide, please. And here's another common usage is for a legacy catalog. If you've migrated to WebSphere Commerce from an older system, you probably have an old catalog that you might need to keep around. But this catalog could require some ancient protocol that nobody supports anymore, or you might need to telnet in or use some other kind of session and then manually look things up. Well, that's a pain, and you don't want to have to write application code that integrates with that. So what you can do instead is apply a web service to wrap around your legacy catalog, and that service can handle all the screen scraping and whatever needs to be done for you. Then that web service exposes that as an interface, which your WebSphere Commerce application can access. So you take something that's very old and complicated, and then by wrapping in a web service, allow it to be accessed in a very modern fashion. Okay, so next slide. Okay, so that brings us to the end of this web services presentation. I hope you all found it valuable. Here are some resources you can access as a next step to learning more about applying web services. If you just need a refresher on web services, learning about WSDL and SOAP in general, the W3 website is a good first page to look at. Here are some WebSphere Commerce tutorials that cover developing web services and deploying on commerce. We also have a Redbook available, and if you have web service problems, the first place you should look is at the WASP Must Gather for gathering up all the relevant information before calling support. Okay, next slide. Yes, I believe that's the last slide. Okay. So I guess we'll be opening the lineup for questions now.
Thank you, Roy, Joshua, and Fazana, for a great presentation.
Okay.
At this time, we'll conclude the presentation. We hope the information presented today has been valuable to you. We appreciate your participation. We hope you will join us for future presentations, which will be announced on the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange site. Remember, a replay of today's presentation will also be available on the site in the next day or two. Thanks very much for joining us today. Thank you, Roy, Joshua, and Farzana for presenting today.